DW.
We arrived at the Zelikan camp northeast of Mosul just before sunset. There had been heavy clashes in the area at the time as Peshmerga and Iraqi forces pushed closer to the contested city of Mosul. Our objective was to document first-hand accounts of the atrocities conducted by the self-proclaimed Islamic State group, also known as IS, that we had been hearing all about. Yet despite being free from their grip, no one wanted to talk to us. These people still lived in fear, fear that IS would see their faces, hear their voices, and kill the remaining relatives they still had inside the city. According to estimates, about 1.2 million people are still in Mosul. Terrifying stories are coming out of the city. Reports of mass murders, entire families being used as human shields, bridges rigged with explosives, and a city clearly petrified. After a while, we saw a group of refugees carrying what appeared to be a frail old man with a huge brace on his leg towards us. "He will talk," they said. "He has nothing more to lose."
Ahmed Ismail Khalil Saleh, Chenchi.
My name is Ahmed Ibrahim Adel Salah. I'm from Chanchi village. I'm a refugee now, but before coming here, I had a nice family, a nice life. Now I'm living alone.
The men sat him down on a plastic white stool in front of the many tents provided by the United Nations High Commission for Refugees. Ahmed wanted to tell his story.
I used to have four sons and a wife. I was living in a rented house in the village. I was working in a factory baking bread. I was making money for our life. When IS came, our situation changed completely.
He adjusted himself on the stool to make his damaged leg more comfortable.
They were giving us electricity from a generator for only 1 or 2 hours a day. We got water once every 3 or 4 days. They were getting money from us for the electricity and the water. Business was very bad. When IS came, nobody could work or run their business. The economy was very bad.
A week prior to our meeting, Kurdish Peshmerga forces entered Ahmed's village. He paused and just looked at our translator for a few seconds, as if to prepare him for what he was about to share.
We heard the Peshmerga were coming, so IS started shelling the village. One of their rockets landed on my house. My entire family died in that explosion. My home was destroyed, my four children and my wife, as well as some of our neighbours, died. I buried them there. I would be happier if I died and my children and my wife were still alive.
Ahmed's leg was also badly damaged in the explosion and is now missing 7 centimeters of bone around where his knee used to be. It took 2 days of intense fighting to finally liberate the village. All Ahmed could do was wait in agonizing pain until it was safe for coalition forces to bring him and other residents who survived to this camp.
How are they getting away with this? They are beheading people, cutting off their legs, using them by force, taking their children, daughters and sons, marrying them off without permission. When the Peshmerga come, IS puts explosives on people and sends them to war as suicide bombers.
He looked down at his leg, wrapped in a big black brace with loose blue Velcro straps.
I hope because of you, some people here will help me. I've been living with this pain for 5 days. I've had no treatment, only painkillers. I pray Allah will punish IS for what they did. I lost my wife, I lost my land, my country. If I go back to my home, what will I do?
It was heartbreaking to hear Ahmed's words, and I knew his story was far from the only one. As we left, small pickup trucks pulled into the camp carrying about 20 people, fathers, mothers, and children. They were the latest arrivals to have escaped the terror with their lives. Just outside the city of Erbil, roughly 80 kilometers east of Mosul, is the Dibaga refugee camp. More than 32,000 people are staying here. Most are refugees who fled Mosul when IS entered the area back in 2014. Yet many more continue to arrive, risking everything to make the dangerous escape. It's been well documented that IS have snipers on the lookout for those trying to flee and that the escape routes are littered with landmines. Ibrahim Hussein Mohammed knows the risks better than anyone.
We were fleeing. My family was walking in front of me. 10 minutes into our journey, two of my daughters tripped a wire connected to an explosive device planted in the ground, and it went off. My 9-year-old was killed immediately. Nothing remained of her. We buried her there at that site. My other daughter, aged 17, her leg was injured. We carried her on our shoulders until finally we reached the army, but my daughter was dead.
Ibrahim recently fled with his family after a mortar also landed in their house.
We decided to flee in the middle of the night. We couldn't take any of our stuff except for some clothes, which we lost when the explosion happened. We even left the gold on my daughter's wrist at the explosion site.
As of early November, nearly 18,000 people have managed to flee the outskirts of Mosul since October 16th, when the Iraqi Prime Minister announced the beginning of the operation. Yet, as Iraqi forces begin their offensive on the city itself, humanitarian agencies are bracing themselves for massive waves of displacement, says Courtney Lair from the Norwegian Refugee Council.
We are expecting in the first several weeks up to 200,000 individuals and total around 700,000 people fleeing Mosul in the coming months. The humanitarian community is desperately trying to prepare, but this many people at once is extremely challenging. There's a desperate funding situation here in Iraq, and it's very challenging for NRC and other humanitarian agencies to prepare for that number of people coming all at once.
Aid agencies have spent millions of dollars preparing for this expected exodus, but the UNHCR say it has received just under half of the nearly $200 million needed for its Mosul emergency work. Camps are being built, but many more are needed to satisfy the numbers expected. Yet for those who have so far escaped with their lives, the big question remains, what comes next?
I love my nation, I love my country, but my suffering is too much. I say to the people, see our situation and take care of your country. Stay united. If you become like us, you'll be in trouble. Look at me, I lost my wife and children, now I'm alone. For many years I worked to build a life, but now I have nothing. How will I live?
Ibrahim, who lost his two young daughters trying to escape, has a third daughter still in Mosul. He hasn't heard from her in months. He says all he has now is the hope that he will one day be reunited with her. Natalie Carney for DW, on the outskirts of Mosul, northern Iraq.
This report was brought to you by DW.